Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started. Hello, how are you all? My name is Andrew. As stated in the introduction, I'm here with Henry and Josh as usual. And we said at the end of our last podcast, last Monday, we said that there was a chance that we might be successful in this North London derby. We said it was somewhat of a long shot. Well, how wrong we were. Arsenal were magnificent. They were the best we've ever seen them, at least this season. And they completely dominated from minute one. They completely overran Spurs. They controlled the game. They played through the thirds, they pressured Spurs into submission, and by the 65th, 70th minute, this game was all but over. So, Henry, just as a preliminary question, what did you think of the game? How do you feel it went? Were you happy with how it went? And what were your primary first thoughts of the 90 minutes?
Well, I think, before we go any further, I think credit is due to Josh, because I think, Andrew, last week you and I were the skeptics on the podcast, whereas I think Josh predicted a 2-1 win, but
is that,
he
is
did
that
predict
American,
a win.
That American optimism just
keeps
it
paid
going
off for him this time. I don't. Maybe at Burnley next week we might not have the same outcome, but nonetheless. For me, it was just such a frenetic game. It was so great to watch. And I think the high press that we implemented had such a great effect, and it had such a positive effect on so many players. I mean, I think we tried to implement it at Manchester City, but at Manchester City it seemed as though Alexis Sanchez was just kind of on a personal mission trying to wave people forward. This time round, after the international break, it seemed more cohesive, and it was really, really great to see, because Eric Dier, I thought, had a shocker from the fifth minute onwards. I think Alexander Lacazette closed down Eric Dier, who was trying to send the ball long, which Spurs rarely do anyway. And I think that set the tone for the rest of the game.
Yeah. I think it was clear from the first few stanzas of play that Arsenal wanted to play on the front foot, that they wanted to press high up the pitch. Usually, When they play with the 3-4-3, they ask the two wide attackers to sit in, and they play almost a 5-4-1 with the two attackers as the two wide men in the midfield four. But this time it was clear that Wenger had asked them to push right onto the two wide centre halves with Lacazette on Eric Dier, as you said. They were really aggressive. They weren't conservative. It was good to see. What do you think, Josh?
I thought it was beautiful. I mean, there weren't really any points where I was nervous. Even before we scored, I didn't think that the Spurs looked, they didn't seem like they were out there to win. I mean, Cech did have to make a couple good saves, but I mean, I think the most credit has to go, as wonderful as Mesut Ozil was, I think it has to go to, you know, the points of concern that we had was right down that spine, and they put in Mustafi and Xhaka and Ramsey, which is usually such a weak point for us, was so incredibly strong. And, you know, Ramsey was one of our best defenders on the day. Xhaka wasn't exposed at all. And it just, it went completely against what you would have expected to happen.
I mean, to add to that point, I think having Mustafi back, having his athleticism there was so, so key. If we had Mertesacker in the back line, for all his experience, I don't think we implement the press like we did on Saturday. I think the athleticism that Mustafi has allowed us to press high up the field, and I think it really benefited Xhaka that he didn't have to cover as much ground. We were playing in a much smaller area of the pitch, and I think that was a real benefit to him. And Ramsey has an engine like you wouldn't believe, so the game was never going to be too much for him from a fitness standpoint. But I think having Mustafi's athleticism in our back line really, really helped us, because not only now with those three have we got a vast amount of experience in Mustafi, Monreal and Koscielny, but we've also got a lot of athleticism in there as well.
Yeah, which is important when you're playing as a back three rather than a back four. You don't necessarily have the protection of the two traditional fullbacks either side of you. And there is you have to have the capability to be able to come out into the flanks and cover quite a wide range of space back there. That's an important aspect. I know Wenger was talking earlier in the season about that back three, saying that the blend of experience, pace and physicality in being able to challenge for the ball was something that he really valued. And it was excellent to see Mustafi back in the starting lineup.
Yeah, and one thing I would also add on to that is I know last week I mentioned how Callum Chambers should come in and help Xhaka. I didn't think of how a high press would really help Xhaka in that form, and that's really opened my eyes, and maybe that's the way we go moving forward.
Yeah, I have always been a proponent of the high press. I think this Arsenal team, the current crop of players that they have always benefited from playing on the front foot. Players like Aaron Ramsey, players like Alexis Sanchez, even somebody like Granit Xhaka, who struggles when the game is in and around him and it's intricate and it's tight and it's quick and sharp, but it's over short spaces. But if there's a little bit more room around him and he can read the game from a bit deeper, where the passes are coming from centre halves and they're 20, 30 yards as they were from Eric Dier and from Vertonghen and from Sanchez, that being the Spurs Sanchez on Saturday, he has more time to cover the ground that he needs, and he does have a better reading of the game from that position. What do you think about the decision from Wenger to implement a high-pressing style, Josh? Do you think that it was one that we saw glimpses of against City but was just better executed? Do you think that, say, had Lacazette played against City, perhaps a high-pressing style would have been more successful as well?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you can't argue with how well the high press worked just because of the results. I mean, you look at the numbers here, and the three people that were supposed to kill us were Kane, Ali, and Eriksen. They lost the ball 8 times combined, which is more than the entire Arsenal team lost the ball. So clearly our press upset them to the point that they were pretty much helpless. And yeah, I do think, you know, I still don't think that the way we performed against City was terrible. If we would have had the right personnel in there, I don't see why we couldn't have hung with them a lot closer. And a lot of that comes with Lacazette, you know. And sometimes it just comes down to which Alexis Sanchez is going to be out there. Because against City, he didn't seem like... I don't know. It wasn't like Oxlade-Chamberlain against Liverpool where he was just loafing around. But he just looked like he was drilling his head into the ground or something. Against Tottenham, he was everywhere. It started kind of rough for him, but once he settled in, it looked like the old Alexis again.
Yeah, and he was... Even when Arsenal don't necessarily play with a defined high-pressing system, Sanchez still goes and chases the ball, often to the detriment of the team, because he will go and it's a simple 1-2 for the opposition players around him to manoeuvre the space around him, and then he's suddenly out of position.
And you're throwing his toys at the pram.
Exactly, because nobody's supporting him. Whereas, and that was partly the case against City, where there were moments where he would go and press John Stones at centre-half, but Stones could simply play the ball out to the wing-back or into midfield, into Fernandinho. And because the support wasn't there, there was an easy out ball. Against Spurs, there was a clear instruction from Wenger of the midfield four of Xhaka, Ramsey, Bellerin on the right and Kolasinac on the left to stay really high up the pitch and force Dier, when he played the pass wide to Sanchez or Vertonghen either side of him, to force that ball long into Harry Kane and Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen. And the reason, and it's a brilliant stat that you brought up about them losing the ball so often, the reason that they did lose the ball so often is because the passes into them were from 30, 40 yards away. They were long, they were aimless, they were under pressure. If you give somebody like Moussa Dembélé time in the middle of the pitch, he will be able to find Harry Kane and Christian Eriksen in those pockets of space. But if you put good players under pressure, even good players struggle. And that's what Arsenal did brilliantly on Saturday, in contrast to City. Just another point as well, it was a clean sheet, which, from an Arsenal perspective in a big game is very, very rare. This season we've played four of the traditional top six, or five of the other top six. The only team we've yet to play is Manchester United. We've conceded seven goals, seven of which came in two games. The other two were clean sheets, a 0-0 draw at Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, and then obviously the 2-0 win on Saturday against Spurs. Henry, was it, well, obviously it was nice to see a clean sheet. Do you think that was as important as the two goals that were scored? And how do you see perhaps the perceived defensive improvement influencing this Arsenal team moving forward?
Before we go any further, I think it's important to note this is Arsenal we're talking about. This is one game. Let's see how we get on against Burnley next week. I thought the clean sheet was mighty important because all week we'd heard not only about the supposed power shift, but how Harry Kane was also the king of the derby and how he scored in just about every single one he's played in.
Yeah, he's played in five Premier League derbies and scored six goals, scoring in every single one of them. So, before the weekend.
Thank you for adding credibility to my statement that I look a lot smarter now. But for me, I looked at that game, and I believe Rio Ferdinand alluded to this in a post-match analysis. He said the one thing that Tottenham don't have is sheer pace in that front three. We had enough athleticism in that back three to deal with them, and moving forward, as you alluded to earlier, athleticism and experience in that back three I think will do us wonders. It's now just a case of, and this will be incredibly difficult because football's incredibly complex, can we do this on a regular basis moving forward?
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, off the back of that point, Arsenal now find themselves just 1 point behind Spurs, which for North London that is apparently all white is not at all, really. However, they are trailing in the wake of Man City. To be precise, they are 12 points behind City. They're still in sixth place. They're 2 points behind Chelsea and they're 4 points behind Manchester United. So it was a win. It was an important win. But every other team in the top six also won, other than Spurs, obviously. So it still leaves Arsenal with a little bit of room to catch up on. They've still got a little bit of ground to make up, and they don't necessarily have the easiest run coming up. They've got Burnley away next weekend on Sunday, which we will preview later in the show, and they do have a key game against Manchester United in early December in a couple of weeks, which again we will be looking forward to as the time comes. So Josh, really, as we see ourselves in the Premier League table now in sixth, do you think that that's a fair position for, as the season's gone by, do you think that's a position that is easily improvable on, or do you think that actually Arsenal are perhaps overperforming a bit, especially given the general expectation that they were going to lose on Saturday?
No, I think it's a good place to be in. I mean, it's still very early in the season. We've got this game coming up against United, and again, I say this all the time, but United just doesn't strike me as a team that can do what City did and stick it to us, because they haven't done it all year. And, you know, Lukaku, they've got Zlatan back, and that's kind of worrying. But, you know, I've seen our defense shape up, and when they've got the right people out there, I don't see who they can't beat as long as they stick to the right people. And you know, 1 point behind Spurs, and I don't know if City's catchable. I mean, granted, Xhaka came out and said we can catch them, and that's cute and all, but I mean, I think right now we just have to be realistic and think, you know, I don't see why we can't. We showed Chelsea that we're right on par with them. I think we're going to show United the same thing, and I think that this position, it's not flattering, but it's a really good position to be in, because now we've got the momentum going forward, and I don't think, you know, Spurs have struggled lately. It wasn't just us that they've struggled against. They struggled against Crystal Palace, and they lost to United before that. United have had their struggles too. I feel very confident that we can, in the coming weeks, that we can push up into third, fourth place.
I mean, United for me, I'm ever the pessimist. I'm looking at United and we're comparing them to Manchester City. The one thing I worry about is that they'll pose a completely new challenge to us with regards to physicality. I mean, I wouldn't be
I
surprised if
agree.
Mourinho just comes out all guns blazing and goes, you know what? Let's go Lukaku, Zlatan, Pogba, Matic, Fellaini. Go on, Xhaka and Ramsey. Let's see how you deal with all of this. They'll be a completely different beast to Manchester City. And whilst, again, I look at their back four, five, and I go, okay, we can have a go at you. I look at Xhaka and Ramsey going up against Matic, Pogba, Fellaini, Herrera, whoever it might be, and I go, okay, that's where the game's going to be won or lost. How can we win the game in there? But if you're talking about how Arsenal have done so far this season, I think this is a fair reflection of where they should be. They've had stereotypical defeats to Liverpool, which was an abysmal defeat, and then we lost away at Stoke, which was typical of us and shouldn't have happened. You could argue that we were unlucky, but then again, we were lucky on the weekend if you were to ask some people with the free kick for the first goal, and you could argue that both goals were offside, but sometimes the luck's on your side. I mentioned in the last podcast what we had to do until January was stay with a pack. I did not expect the win on the weekend, but the narrative remains the same. Stay with a pack. Don't be Tottenham. Like, I know it sounds awful when I say put the pressure on, but keep the pressure on. And then eventually someone will break, and that hopefully it's not us.
And I think if you do take Manchester City as the anomaly, which they most certainly are, they have a goal difference of 33 after 12 games. So they've won on average their games by nearly 3 goals, which is just ridiculous. If you were to take Manchester City out of the equation, Arsenal are actually only 4 points off virtual top, being Manchester United. So, and they obviously still have to play United as well. So they are right in the mix. You know, there's only 1 point separating themselves, Liverpool and Spurs, after the win on Saturday. So there is definitely a lot to play for. I saw a stat on BBC Sport earlier. This was before the weekend's games, where it said the first 11 games of the Premier League were played over 87 days. The next 11 are played over 47 days. So there is a lot of football to play between now and January. The festive period, as ever, is going to be absolutely stacked. There are a lot of points to win and to lose. So it will be interesting to see how Arsenal do over the coming weeks and months. As we transition back. Oh, go on, Henry.
I was just gonna say, did any of you guys get the chance to see what the infamous Garth Crooks
Oh,
wrote in
God.
his Team of the Week segment this week? He said
No,
that
but
Mesut
I can
Ozil would
imagine it's
be
stupid.
it was something along the lines of that Mesut Ozil would be much more appreciated at Spurs, and I just thought, you have no idea. You have
Was
no
he
idea.
playing Mesut Ozil in his usual defensive midfield position so that he could squeeze
No, I
every
think he was
possible
playing him at
attacking
left
player into his
midfield in like a
team?
3-4-3, which would never work anyway.
I've seen some truly terribly out of shape teams by Garth Crooks just so he can include every single striker on the planet into his team of the week. It's maddening. It's maddening.
reminds me of an 8-year-old's ultimate
Yeah,
team
it
on
does. Yes,
FIFA.
it does. Yes, it does.
But nonetheless.
Good old Garth. So as we transition back to the game, I just want to pick out a few individuals who played well. We'll look at Ozil and Mustafi in a minute. So ignoring those two, Josh, who were the other individuals who may have kind of gone under the radar a little bit as to who really helped drive Arsenal towards the 3 points and the crucial derby win?
I think Ramsey was probably the most, if you throw out Ozil and Mustafi, I think he deserves so much praise, and I don't think he'll get it because he didn't take many shots, he didn't create many chances, but it was his positioning. I saw actually his average position was behind Xhaka's average position.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
Yeah, I mean, he defended so well. He completed five tackles, which was more than any other two Arsenal players combined, and you could see it throughout the game. I mean, he was back in the box defending and defending effectively. And yeah, he slipped a few times, and then he changed his boots, and he was fine. I've heard people say that he, he tackled himself too many times. Yeah, but he was great on the day. It was an understated great. It was kind of like, I mean, I hate to say it, it was kind of like what you see out of Francis Coughlin, where he didn't have a lot going forward, but it was in the defense, and it was in all of, you know, putting the pressure on that he really excelled. And our midfield wouldn't have been as composed as it was if he wouldn't have been back there winning back the ball and just being a presence there. He wasn't caught forward. It was just a great performance from him. And, you know, I do the player rating, so I take notes on individual players, and usually I'll write, like, good pass or a terrible defense. For Monreal, he has the fewest notes. He just has four words, and I wrote good, 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 and great. And I think that's... That just sums up Monreal, because he doesn't always, he rarely,
solid.
Yeah, he doesn't really do anything that makes you think, wow, he's such a great guy. But the fact that you just always know how reliable he is, he always needs to get credit for games like this where the defense is good, because he's been a consistent part of that defense throughout. And it's really hard to find something he does wrong.
Yeah, with every game, I'm becoming more and more of a Monreal fan. I was... When him and Kieran Gibbs were battling for the left back starting role, I was very much in the Gibbs camp of him wanting to prove his fitness and prove that he should be the starter. But especially in this moulded fullback centre half position that you get in this back three, very much like Cesar Azpilicueta at Chelsea, Monreal has that ability, having played fullback for the majority of his career, to find the balance of position perfectly. His positional sense is outstanding. He's willing...
Oh, yeah, Andrew.
No, go ahead.
You took the words straight out of my mouth, as in I've been saying quietly to a couple of people for months, he is our Cesar Azpilicueta. He is so good upstairs.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, people are always asking me, how is he in the Spain team? How is he in the Spain team? Just, you don't hear his name mentioned, and it's almost a game, he's almost a player where if he's mentioned, you either know he's having a much better game than usual, or he's having an absolute shock.
Yeah.
And that's a rarity for him. He is Mr. Dependable in our squad.
Yeah, and I think when he struggled previously was when he played traditionally at left back, where there is a lot more space to be exploited by virtue of the position. And if he was up against a pacey winger, he would. I remember Traore of Middlesbrough ran rings around him. Not necessarily.
And Zahar do the same.
Yeah,
as well.
Not necessarily because they're better players, just because they're quick and they've got a lot of space to drive into. When he's playing at centre half or a left sided centre half, there's a bit more protection by virtue of the position, in terms of there's less space behind him to be exploited by a quick, you know, darting, scampering winger. And also, if he does come wide, it's because he's chosen to come wide, not because he's started out wide. And his decision-making is so good that very rarely does he decide to commit himself to a challenge in the left channel without it being the right decision.
I mean, it's interesting. I was lucky enough to go and watch Arsenal scrape past Swansea a couple of weeks back. And something I noticed was that obviously, Alexis loves to cut inside, and when Kolasinac has the ball, you'll often see Monreal make the run down as an overlapping fullback, and I'm thinking, I quite like this, because we still have that flexibility of him on that side being a creative force, and you still don't really impact the balance, because playing a back three or back five, you lack an offensive player going forward, so he still can become that extra man.
Yeah,
going
you just
forward
you shift the other two centre backs 5 yards, 10 yards to the left slightly to account for his more advanced positioning.
But another thing, just
yeah,
when
go
he
ahead.
Comes forward and he intercepts the ball on the halfway line and instigates attacks. Oh, that gets me very, very excited, because I know that we have a very good chance coming, usually when that happens.
Yes. I'll give you one of my... understated guys. I think Alexander Lacazette was fantastic on Saturday. He came to this club with the reputation of being a goal scorer, far more like Ian Wright than Thierry Henry, even though, because he's French, he you know, inevitably gets the comparisons to Henry. But on Saturday, I think he showed what movement brings to this team. He was so intelligent in his runs. The timing of his run for Sanchez's goal, where he gets his assist, the way he arcs his run, and you can see him waiting for Bellerin to play the pass, and he's hesitating, he's holding his position for as long as he dares before he darts down the channel, and then Bellerin plays the ball and he swings it across, and Sanchez eventually slams it into the roof of the net. But he was continually looking for that ball down behind the two wide centre halves of Spurs, and what that did was created space for Ozil and Sanchez to drift inside, in behind Moussa Dembélé and Moussa Sissoko, in between the Spurs defence and the Spurs midfield. I think Lacazette's movement was crucial, and I'm a real big Olivier Giroud fan, but I think you saw the difference between having a mobile, subtle centre-forward rather than a back-to-goal, play-the-ball-into-my-feet type centre-forward that Giroud is. And I think they both have their place and they both have their utilities. But on Saturday, I think Lacazette's involvement and the way that he played, the intelligence that he played with, was really crucial to a number of chances that Arsenal were able to create.
For me, it was such a good team performance. I wrote on Twitter afterwards, that was the best Arsenal performance that I've seen in a long time, and every player to a man was outstanding. I thought the wing-backs did a really good job. I'm usually quite critical of Bellerin simply because I think he's a bit anonymous sometimes in games going forward, especially. But I thought he was fantastic. He muffed a couple of opportunities, but I loved the fact that he was there. He was really high up the pitch. He looked very comfortable. And I also want to give a shout out to Koscielny, because there was one particular instance where early in the game where he and Mustafi went for a header.
Yeah, and Harry Kane missed it. Kane slipped
through, yeah.
And then
Kane went through on goal. And I thought at that point that we were in for a really long day. But and just to add to that, people are like, oh, Spurs didn't... Oh, they were quite quiet. They had a few chances. Eriksen hit the post. Harry Kane, I thought, should have scored when he cut inside. Cech made a good save, and Son should have done better with his opportunity. So I don't think that we completely nullified their attack. But I will agree in that it was a lot, as an Arsenal fan, I was a lot calmer than I usually would be watching us defend, which is weird. But I thought that Koscielny was just fantastic. The entire back three, we nullified their three best players who went missing in a big game. Go figure.
Yeah.
To leapfrog on what you're saying about Koscielny, you know, at the start too, I thought he looked terrible at the start. Like the first 5 minutes or so, he was everywhere. His aerial clearances were going the wrong way, and he just looked completely lost. But then it got to the point where, and I think this is what a truly great player can do, where he just restarted himself. And by the end of the match, I mean, he was, for the last hour or so, he was central to everything. He was crucial just as much as Mustafi was. And, you know, he has to get a lot of credit because it did not start well for him, and he turned it around himself.
Yeah, I mean, he might be my favourite player in this Arsenal team. I don't really love any of these Arsenal players, really, unfortunately. Maybe Santi, just because he's so small. And as a small bloke, I can appreciate I can appreciate the skill that he has as like a short, slightly podgy fella, kind of turning around in the middle of the field and sending everybody in spirals. I just love it. But Koscielny is definitely one of my more favourited Arsenal players, even if that is a little bit unfounded sometimes. He does have rash moments. I just choose to overlook them simply because I like him.
So does Sergio Ramos.
Well, exactly.
But then also you can look at it. Didn't he make it? Wasn't it his
300 Arsenal appearance? 300 Arsenal appearance. Yeah.
I mean, you can very easily make the argument that he is one of the top centre backs in the Premier League. I'd certainly argue. Possibly
yeah,
five,
I think I would agree with that. I think you have a fit Vincent Kompany in there. think you have Alderweireld in there, Jan Vertonghen in there, and it
tell you what, Davinson Sanchez is going to be a good player.
He looked very good, didn't he? He did look good.
Eric Dier looked lost, but yeah. Sanchez looked very good.
Right, as we did that conversation without factoring in Ozil and Mustafi, Josh, I give you the floor on this one. Who, obviously Mesut Ozil was named Man of the Match officially, quite what those official Man of the Matches actually mean or do, I will never know. But Mesut Ozil was officially named Man of the Match. Who do you believe was deserving of such a mantle?
Well, I have to admit, I copped out in the player ratings and gave them co-man of the matches just because I didn't want to have to choose. But if I had...
I'm sitting on the fence. That's terrible. Terrible.
If I had to choose, it would be Mustafi just because, you know, Ozil was obviously fantastic. But the difference in our composure down the middle between Mustafi being there and Mustafi not being there was so obvious. And the fact that he scored a goal was just icing on the cake. He was fantastic all game. And I actually have the stat here about how important Mustafi is. I've been saving it, so I'm going to unleash it now.
Ready yourselves.
I saw this on Twitter.
Incoming. Here we go. This better be good now. If this is something I retweeted, I'll be so miffed that I haven't
recently.
Used
this. Stoke is the only team to score against Arsenal in the last 9 appearances with Mustafi on the pitch. But it gets better. In 50 Premier League games since Mustafi signed, Arsenal's goal difference is plus 35 from the 32 that Mustafi has started, and just plus 4 in the 18 he's missed. Now, if that isn't a difference maker, then I don't know what is. And it's even made me think, if you're talking about the best center backs in England, how does that kind of number not get into the conversation with Mustafi? I mean, those are monumental differences.
I know. I just love the fact that I'm looking at this tweet now and I'm going, I feel like, what's the character from Wacky Races that I'm thinking of? Oh, Scott, I've forgotten. But nonetheless, carry on. I think he's much like Koscielny, actually. He's incredibly rash. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, he had Diego Costa in his pocket in the Chelsea game last season, which was a similar performance in regards to this is the standard. And then we tailed off. And then he had those rash moments against Bayern Munich, I think it was, from memory, whereas he wasn't marking Lewandowski, and it was just really peculiar. But if he can, continue this vein of form, then we're going to be in pretty good shape, I would assume, moving forward.
Yeah, and I think Koscielny, early in his Arsenal career, was far more frequent with those rash moments. So we've seen Arsene Wenger be able to calm down, to bring an element of conservatism and just be able to control a centre-half that is clearly talented. He has all the skills and the abilities, you know, athletically. He's smart, he's intelligent, he's pretty quick, he's good in the air, he's a good tackler. He just makes dumbfounding decisions every now and then. But we've seen Wenger be able to calm down a centre-half in the past. So hopefully he'll be able to do it again. I would give the Man of the Match to Mesut Ozil purely because I think what Mustafi did was outstanding, but I think it's replaceable. I think if you were to play Koscielny at the heart of that defence and play, say, Rob Holding to the right of him, or you put Per Mertesacker at the heart of that defence like he did at the FA Cup final, perhaps not regularly, but I think you could get the same results. What Mesut Ozil does and what Mesut Ozil did is truly unique to very, very select group of players in world football in terms of the influence that he, when he is committed and when he is trying and for all the arguments of laziness that we can go back and forth on, when he's on his game, there are very few players in world football that have the same ability to create as he does. He's now created more open play goals in the Premier League than any other player, bearing in mind he's missed quite a number of games and seems to be subbed off early every single game. That is truly remarkable. So I would give the Man of the Match to Mesut Ozil, but again, both Ozil and Mustafi were outstanding. Mm. Let's move on to the question of consistency. Henry, you alluded to it there. After all, a North London derby win is wonderful, but let's be honest, 3 points is 3 points. It doesn't matter if it comes against Crystal Palace or against Spurs. It's not worth any more or less.
Nope.
So, why don't Arsenal play like this every week?
I mean, that's a really difficult question to answer. I think it really helped us that Tottenham are a team that, for the most part, are willing to play. It's not like most teams who come to the Emirates who are really boring and just sit with 10 men behind the ball and then break. I mean, I thought Mesut Ozil was my man of the match simply because he was pulling on my heartstrings. He's like, now I want you to stay. What on earth are you doing to me? But it's a case of when teams come to the Emirates and they play 10 men behind the ball, he must be stood there like, this is boring. What on earth is this? It's really, really difficult for us to say, replicate that every week because the game plans are so unique and we're obviously not in a position to adequately say that they can do it every week. I would love to see the same.
But can we say, I agree on your point of quality. You can't expect somebody to produce the same quality every week. But can we expect somebody to produce the same commitment every week?
That's what I was just about to allude to. I think if I can get, maybe not, the press might not work every game and it might not be correct for every game, but if I see Mesut Ozil shove a left back off the ball and track back, I know that the rest of the team is up for it. Because in my mind, if you're the rest of the Arsenal team and you see Sanchez, Lacazette and Ozil all press, all doing dirty work for the good of the team, that can only be inspiring. So I think Arsenal set the standards for themselves in a lot of ways on the weekend, but more than anything, they set a standard with regards to effort and tenacity, which they need to continue moving forward.
Yeah. Right, Josh, you're the eternal optimist, so I think I know what the answer to this question will be. Will, not can, because obviously they can, they have the ability, but will Arsenal play regularly like they did on Saturday?
Well, I think there's always an added degree of importance when they play Spurs, so I don't know if they'll ever hit that top level. But I, of course, I'm the optimist. I do think that they can hit this around this same area, just because, I mean, it seems simple enough that when he puts this, especially this front three out there, look what happens. I mean, we beat, you know, Swansea wasn't the easiest game, but we beat Everton 5-2, we beat Spurs 2-0, and this all stems from having a competent attack that can constantly pressure the goal. And if we continuously put that attack out there, at least right now, everything says that we should be able to replicate this. And then defensively, I think it all hinges on Mustafi. I don't think that what he does is replaceable because we've tried other people there before. And you know, I think that Mustafi brings that communication that Koscielny didn't have. And he brings the athleticism that Mertesacker doesn't have. So he's kind of, for me, he's kind of like a combination of Koscielny and Mertesacker, bringing the best of both parts. And, you know, these are guys you can rely on. These aren't our typical cast of characters. You know, we've had a lot of these guys in the team that have been here a long time. Mustafi hasn't. I think he can be a major difference maker. Lacazette, obviously, is a big-time difference maker. It's just all about using these guys to the best they can be used. And against Tottenham, we did that. Against Everton, we did that. And if we keep using them like that, then there's no reason to think we can't replicate this kind of result.
One thing I would add on to that is this week, last weekend, that was the first time that we have had our best 11 players out on the field together. I don't think Mustafi played against Everton. I think he missed that through injury.
Yeah, he missed.
So that's the first time that we've seen our best 11 on the field together. And if it's anything to go by, it's very, very exciting.
Yeah, and I think that is a good point about the best 11. I think in the past, there hasn't been a clear and defined best Arsenal 11. There's been the best five or six players, and then the other four or five players. There's been actually quite a lot of debate between the fans and the media about who should play where and whether, you know, Wong should start, if they should, Theo Walcott be starting, should No. I don't know. Should Jack Wilshere be starting? Should Kieran Gibbs or Monreal be starting? Whereas this season, I think really almost everybody is on board that the 11 that we saw on Saturday is the best Arsenal 11. Yeah. Now, whether that is good enough is another question. But in the past, where there's been quite a lot of uncertainty in Wenger's team selections and it's never quite been sure what way he's going to go, I think this year it's actually fairly obvious.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that you could possibly say that Wilshere could come in for Xhaka and play as a deep midfielder, but then I'm worried, obviously, because of Jack's injury history, and Wenger tends to now play him as a number 10 anyways, and you can't replace Ramsey because he's so integral, and I can't see Jack getting through the work that Ramsey does simply because of his injury history. So I would argue that this, as of right now, is the 11 that we should be putting forward each and every week in the Premier League.
Yeah, I agree with that. So let's change tack slightly. I want to pick up on something that Martin Keown said. He said it in the summer when Spurs announced plans to build their new stadium. He said that Spurs are 10 years behind Arsenal because of the financial ramifications that building, rebuilding White Hart Lane, is essentially what they're doing, will cost. That's what he said they'll be 10 years behind Arsenal. That seems a little bit harsh, I think. I don't think they're that far behind, really. But his point still stands, that actually Arsenal, behind the scenes, while they may have Salah, Stan and Shipkezik involved and running the ship, actually, they're in a pretty good position to build and to grow and develop. So there was a lot of talk about the North London power shift before Saturday's game. Obviously, Saturday's game, to some extent, kind of put the brakes on that talk. Do you think Spurs are 10 years behind? Oh, we'll go to you first, Josh. Or do you think actually they're closer, and do you think they are catching up? Or do you think Arsenal are in a position to again reassert their dominance in North London?
I still subscribe to the school of thought that until they win something, you can't really put a timeline on it, because until you win something, there's no shift to me. I mean, even before the game, they're talking about the power shift, and I thought it was all crap. I mean, even if they came out and they beat us 5-0, I'm like, what have they done with that, though? They haven't done anything. And sure, they can look good in the right now, and they do look good in the right now. They got a lot of good players. But until you turn those players into winners, into trophy holders, then there's no reason to talk about a power shift.
Yeah.
I would say 10 years is actually generous, because I don't think you can say they're catching up until they win that first trophy, and they haven't.
And Spurs are incredible at not winning things. If there's anything they deserve a trophy for, it is for failing to get a trophy. They haven't actually won a trophy now in nearly a decade since their League Cup win. Obviously, Arsenal fans from very recent memory know what it's like to not win a trophy in nearly a decade. Their current trophyless run is actually longer than that run between 2005 and 2013 for the Gunners, if my memory serves. So, Henry, do you think they're catching up, or do you, like Josh, think that their lack of trophy is reason to doubt the, perhaps not power shift, but growing reason to believe in a potential change?
It's at this point I would love to say that the last time that they won a league title was in 1961. So I just really want to put the knife in and twist it just a little
bit. Yeah, so what's that, 56 years?
Yeah, let's go higher on that number just to make it sound worse. I don't think you can really put a number on it, really. Yes, they finished above us last season, but I think you have to evaluate it almost at the end of every season. I think it's too complex to evaluate it as of right now. If you were to ask me the same question at the end of the year and say Tottenham had finished above us again and we didn't make the Champions League, then I'd go, okay, things are changing. But if they were to finish above us and we also got into the Champions League, I go, okay, what's you didn't do anything special. We won the Europa League, and I mean, it's really, really difficult. You can't simply say, oh, we beat you last year, so now everything's changing. No, as I said on Twitter, form is temporary, class and superiority is permanent.
Hopefully.
That's a big statement, I've just realised. That's a really big statement. And crikey, I've really made my bed now, haven't I?
Yeah, you better line it. Before we move on from the game and look at some other things to note, and also upcoming game against FC Cologne on Thursday night and then Burnley next weekend, is there anything else either of you want to point out about the derby on Saturday, anything about the North London rivalry, any other shout outs or mentions to any players?
Oh, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Theo Walcott on the stretcher.
2-0. Little did he know that he was a predictive genius when he said 2-0.
Sorry, Josh.
No, I actually, since it was such a good team performance, I want to say one thing nice about all the people we didn't mention, because they deserve it as well.
Yes.
I thought Granit Xhaka was one of those games where even I thought, this is not going well. And I will always defend Granit Xhaka, but I was having trouble with it. It was a stupid yellow card. And
let's pause there for a second. We should say this. I think he should have been sent off.
Yeah, those are two bookable offences.
There was the one on Dele Alli.
I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to talk about this. We won the game. This is in the past now. the two goals were offside. It wasn't a foul. We got lucky. We've had our share of unluck against Stoke and Man City. I want to bathe in this luck. Okay.
I think for the rest
of the season.
I guess my point is that everybody's been. Even I am guilty of this. Everyone's been talking about Arsenal dominance on Saturday, but actually, couple of things go another way. Harry Kane scores that goal that you talked about earlier, Henry. Granit Xhaka gets sent off. Mustafi gets ruled for offside. This is a very different game. Other than rugby tackling Moussa Sissoko, Xhaka, I think, he did have a good game. And actually,
Thank you, Mike Dean.
he was right to rugby tackle Moussa Sissoko in that situation, because Arsenal were vulnerable. Sometimes you've just got to take them out. I remember we got a red card against Swansea, I think, last season, where it was one of those cynical, oh, I'm just going to tap the back of your ankle and trip you over. I can't remember who was running through. It was a Swansea attacker, and he just clips his heels, clearly, you're doing it on purpose, knowing that it's a foul and accepting what should have been a yellow card. And I think this was a very, very similar cynical foul that we see every single week in the Premier League. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out. Go on, Josh, what were you saying about your favourite man in the world?
Second favourite, Giroud's definitely
my favourite. Let's not forget Weston McKennie as well.
I have no base to talk about him right now. But yeah, I mean, this is proof of maturity from Xhaka, because we've seen him do this so many times before where he gets sent off for something like that, and maybe it was lucky, I don't care. He's had bad luck before, so he's due one spot of good luck.
I agree on that.
And Sead Kolasinac, I mean, I was so excited to see him wreck someone, anybody. I just wanted to see him just go through somebody, and he didn't, but the one thing I will say about Kolasinac, what I've been saying all year, is what I think is remarkable about him is, yes, he has great games. He doesn't have bad games. He has games where he does his job and is efficient, and that's essentially the worst that we've seen him. And he did another one of those jobs today where he was quiet. And he didn't do a lot, but that's fine. He did his job.
Mm. I mean, he is just an absolute beast, isn't he? He's a complete tank.
He didn't necessarily go through anybody, but there was a lovely little moment where Kieran Trippier is going back with a ball, and he gets rid of the ball, and Kolasinac gives him a good almighty shove into the floor. I was like, yes, I like you a lot.
I actually, going back to my point where Koscielny and Cazorla are the only two players that I love. I was wrong. Kolasinac is another player that I love, purely because he's... We actually have somebody who's physically strong. It just, it seems weird. Yeah. It shouldn't be right. We should have some flimsy little... We should have Andre Santos out there, not Sia Kolasinac. It feels completely, completely upside down.
last thing.
Yeah.
Czech was great. I thought Bellerin was good. And then I just have to say that when Alexis was chasing after that ball and he went into like a full-on water slide dive, then my heart just melted because he was having fun. I'm missing Alexis have fun at Arsenal.
It feels like a long time.
And I feel like, you know, I had a similar moment that Henry had where I thought, well, maybe he'll stay. And now I'm just like, no, I got to get out of that mindset because I don't think he will. But that was just so wonderful to see.
They've got us wrapped around their little fingers, both he
they
and...
They do.
Yeah. Yes. Right, that is our review of the North London Derby from Saturday. We thoroughly enjoyed that game. Well, I can only speak for myself, but I'm sure every Arsenal fan thoroughly enjoyed that game. We will take a little bit of an interlude and then we'll come back. We'll talk about Sven Mislintat, which I am reliably informed is perfectly pronounced. He is our new head of recruitment. We'll briefly touch on him. We'll look at him in more depth next week, but we'll just briefly give you the news on that. And then we'll look ahead to Thursday night's trip to FC Cologne and then the weekend's trip to Burnley. Hello and welcome back. As I mentioned just before that short interlude, Arsenal have a new head of recruitment, which is always very exciting given that we will sell them within 2 or 3 years. Sven Mislintat. Mislintat.
We'll just go with Sven.
Sven Mislintat, is that right?
We're just going to call Sven, him Sven.
Sven Goran Eriksson. No. Sven Mislintat is our new head of recruitment. As you know, I am well versed in who this man is. Per Google, he was the chief scout at Borussia Dortmund for 10 years. He has been accredited with the signings and the acquirings of players like Aubameyang, Shinji Kagawa, Ousmane Dembele, who has since been sold to Barcelona. So he'll also be good at selling future Arsenal stars to Barcelona. And Christian... And Christian Pulisic as well, the latest American star, which Josh, I'm sure,
absolutely,
you are extremely excited about. I'm sure he will not flame out like Freddie Adu. Adu popping up in a big spot there from Freddie Adu. That, to be honest, that's all I know about Sven. But I must say that it does set Arsenal up for the time of post-Wenger. It is coming. Whether we like it, whether we want it, whether we want it to happen tomorrow, or whether it wants to happen in 5 years, it is coming. And there are, you know, the Mark Overmars, Sven Mislintat, or however you... Sven.
Aren't they also chasing the director at football at Barcelona?
Yeah, I have heard...
I can't remember his name, but...
reports of that. So there are growing reports that they are beginning to build a team of people for a post-Wenger era. And I think that's when Sven M will come into his... I'm sorry, Sven. I just can't pronounce your name. I'm a white English fella who struggles with foreign names. I'm really sorry.
And who has an affinity for short midfielders with the first
name. Yeah, yes, quite. Wenger makes all the decisions for Arsenal, especially involved with transfers. There is no player that is signed without his signature at the bottom of the contract. There is no player that is potentially even scouted without at least his go-ahead. So I'm not quite sure how much power Sven will yield until Wenger leaves, but I have a feeling that this is a long-term hiring to provide that base for whoever will come into the club post Wenger. Without spending too much time on this, Josh, what do you think about Mr. Sven?
I think it's great. I mean, this is the guy that you listed the names. If there's one thing that Dortmund have always done well, it's the ability to find sort of obscure names and prove that they're capable of playing at the top level, which is what Wenger has always tried to do. And, you know, I think it shows a good deal of responsibility from Arsenal, because, you know, when Ferguson left Manchester United, they still haven't recovered. And I think this is Arsenal's attempt to kind of soften the blow of Wenger leaving us, because, like you said, he's been such an overlord of sorts that does everything, that we need to have as many resources as possible when he leaves to ensure that we don't do what United did.
Yeah, there is no manager in world football that has the same power at his respective club as Wenger does at Arsenal. In fact, probably the last manager to have that same position of control was Sir Alex Ferguson. And as you rightly bring up, we've seen the effect of his leaving and the difficulties that United have had in replacing him. And they've not done it with nobodies. They've done it with the chosen one in David Moyes, and they've done it with Louis van Gaal, who is, for all his faults, a specially experienced manager at the top level, who's managed some huge players and huge clubs and huge countries. So, post-Wenger will be difficult. And this, I believe, is a signal that it is on its way. I don't think he'll be at Arsenal 3 or 4 years down the line. I think it's coming. Henry, do you have anything to add before we move on to the upcoming two games this week?
Can you just say that David Moyes is the chosen one once more, and can we keep it as a soundbite?
Well, that was the banner, wasn't it? That was the banner. David Moyes is the chosen one. He was handpicked by Sir Alex, apparently.
I'm aware of that, but that's just, it's funny.
I actually feel sorry for David Moyes. I like him. I am in the minority, but I really hope he does well at West Ham, because I do like him. And he just, he's just so sad.
Going back to Sven Mislintat.
Oh, you did better than me there.
Thank you. I think more than anything, I agree with you that this is a long-term project, and especially if the reported figure of 1.8 million euros is correct, then it's a supposed steal. But you can either look at it like that, or you can look at it as a power play from Gazidis to go, right, this is it now. I think this has Gazidis' fingerprints all over it with regards to, okay, now I'm going to really start turning the screw in how I want the club to be operating moving forward. Which is fine, because, as you said, Wenger is not long for Arsenal in the long term.
Let's move on to Thursday night then. Do you think Josh Wenger will continue to rotate his squad? I mean, he doesn't need to rotate his squad to rest players anymore. He's got enough.
Yeah, I mean,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, he's going to send out, I would hope he sends out even more kids than before.
No, me too.
Yeah, and I mean, in particular, I want to see Eddie Nketiah start. I want to see him given at least an hour out there, because he's just such an exciting player that just can't stop scoring. And I want to see how long that can last. And I would love to see Reece Nelson not used as a wingback, because he's made a comment that he wants to play further forward, and we all know that he should be playing further forward. I don't know who else he would put back there, so I think we should expect to see him in the wing back again. And I'd like to see Marcus McGuane, too, because there was a lot about him. He's actually one of the players who I haven't seen play all that much, but he's the kind of defensive midfielder that I think we're looking for, that can sit deep and kind of be that enforcer role. And I'd like to see how, I mean, it's still going to be a competitive game because we're away, and Colin is, I mean, for as much as they've struggled this year, they're still going to put up a challenge. And I'd just like to see how he reacts to that kind of thing. And of course, to see Jack Wilshere, too, since this is all he does these days.
hobbles his way through Europa League games with his walking stick.
I mean, I don't think Wenger will rotate much.
No, I don't think he will either.
I think Theo was ill. Whether he recovers in time for this game, I'm not sure. But I think Eddie Nketiah could possibly start, seeing as Danny Welbeck has just come back from injury and Giroud hurt himself on the international break. So I think it is plausible that Nketiah could start, or you may see Akpom.
I was going to say, do you think it would be more likely to see Akpom? I know Wenger, he often talks about the blend of experience and youth in these games, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And there's a chance that he maybe sees Nketiah as too young when he's playing the likes of Nelson and, you know, Maitland-Niles out of position, Willock in central midfield.
I mean, and let's not forget, that's the atmosphere that the Cologne fans brought to the Emirates.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah, it was mental.
I'm assuming that there's going to be a similar kind of atmosphere in Germany on Thursday, and it'll be a great test to see whether they could really put up with that kind of environment, because it's definitely not like playing at a local park for your under-23s.
Yeah, I'd like to see Callum Chambers get back out there too, just because he's a guy that, you know, even when we first signed him, he was supposed to be the next big thing in England.
Yeah,
he was John Stones before there was a John Stones. And it's not like all that talent just goes away. And from what we've seen, it hasn't gone away. I mean, for Middlesbrough last year, he was fantastic. It was a defense that was constantly under siege, and he was the centerpiece of it. And somehow they still maintain one of the best defenses, despite being relegated. And, you know, even in the few times that we've seen him at Arsenal in the past few years, he's looked good. I always think back to, I think it was 2015. Yeah, 2015, because it was when Leicester won, and he had to step in because Koscielny got hurt, and he completely stonewalled Vardy and Mahrez on multiple occasions. And this is he's still got such a big future ahead of us, and I think he's getting kind of forgotten, and I don't want that to happen to him, because there's so much talent there, and I'd hate to see him fulfill that talent somewhere else when it could be happening here.
Do you think it will be a case of, but not for Thursday's game, but just in the future, do you think it will be a case of either or with Callum Chambers and Rob Holding? Because the development of young players has always been predicated on playing time. It's just dependent on it. And it seems to me to be quite difficult to offer both regular and substantial and important playing time, not just Europa League, but Premier League playing time when injuries come. Do you think it's going to come down to one of the two?
No.
Or do you think Wenger has the ability to develop
both? He can absolutely develop both, because both of them have shown that they're not far from Premier League quality, so it's not like we're taking a risk by putting them back there. I mean, it's not like if we were to put Christian Bielik back there, then yeah, I think you kind of got to pick your battles. But if you put a back three out there with Mertesacker, Holding, and Chambers, I know that's all right-sided, but I don't. That's a perfectly capable defense, and it's not like they're still in prospect status. They've graduated from that. They're at the point where, yeah, they need game time, but it's not like you're going out of your way to give it to them. They're still effective.
Yeah, I know you're a primary member of the Callum Chambers fan club, Henry.
I'm a big fan. I haven't got a jersey, though. That might just be a Christmas list.
No. Maybe he will develop into the player that you actually think he could do. Are there any other youngsters that you'd like to see, or maybe even not youngsters, are there any other players you'd like to see? I am, again, looking forward to seeing Wiltshire. I love Wiltshire. Like, as a ex-player, essentially, who has had injuries and has struggled to play because of knee injuries, I appreciate just seeing somebody else on a football pitch who has also suffered from injuries. So I have great, I just love watching him play. Just to see him on a football pitch is amazing. Again, whether he ever actually finds his best form, I don't actually really care. It's just good to see him playing again. I'd like to see Niles play centre midfield. As Josh said, I'd like to see Reece Nelson play further up the field, even though I think both of those things are pretty doubtful. For you, Henry, are there any other players you'd like to see?
I'd like to see Iwobi. I mean, we're going to have so many options. I'm just running through my head now with Danny Welbeck back. He's probably above, it will be in the pecking order when you consider the early part of the season.
If Giroud is out, then maybe that does create space for Iwobi on the left side of that front three.
Yeah, so I think I'd love to see Iwobi start, and I'd love to see him get a goal. He had a chance on the weekend, which he was unsuccessful with, but I'd love to see him get a goal again, because I do believe he has a big role to play in the long-term future. I know we keep referring to the long-term future, but as fans, we can dream, and I think he's an important part of that dream. But on the off chance that Rhys Nelson does play further forward and Wenger decides to rest Iwobi and Welbeck and all these guys, I'd love to see one of Jordi Osei-Tutu or Justa Silva at one of the wing-back positions, and for one of them to really make a claim, just to say, yeah, I can do what Ainsley Maitland-Niles is doing, I can do what Reece is doing, don't forget about me, they're not the only hot shots coming through. And maybe Matt Macey should play as well, because Ospina's not long.
I mean, there is a concerning lack of depth at the wing-back position, isn't there? I think I assume that if Kolasinac was to miss a period of time, Monreal would move out to left wing back and a centre half would come in rather than play Maitland-Niles out there. But in terms of a straight swap, that there aren't, you know, with Chamberlain and Kieran Gibbs having departed, there is a little. If there's a position that I'm concerned about in terms of numbers, it is the two wing back positions.
I think it's a case of if Kolasinac were to get injured, I wouldn't be surprised if we were to return to a four at the back temporarily. With Monreal going to left back. And then all these diehard Arsenal fans could have their dreams come true and Jack Wilshere can come into the field as part of a midfield three and we'd all be happy.
Yes. Right, well, I think that's enough for Thursday night's game. Again, Cologne aren't out of this. They can still qualify from this group, so they will be up for it, that's for sure. Whether Arsenal will be or not is another question. It will be extremely interesting to see what team Arsene Wenger goes with. To a slightly more interesting and perhaps even game, Sunday afternoon at Turf Moor against Sean Dyche's Burnley, and we'll touch on Sean Dyche in a minute. Are Burnley the best team in the Premier League not from the traditional top six? Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's scary. They're always that team that I look at and I'm like, oh, we can go there. We'll beat them easily. And it's never like that. It's never. They play so well at Turf Moor that I might actually even be more nervous going into that game than I was going into Tottenham or going into Manchester City, just because I've seen what they've done to us. And it's kind of a game that, you know, we were coming off a really high-spirited effort. So, I mean, yeah, they are the best team outside of that traditional six or so. And I do think that we have to hopefully get to them quickly. Because if we don't get to them quickly, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, just they've only conceded 9 goals this season, which is the same amount as Spurs. Only the two Manchester clubs have conceded less, which is worrying. And 3 of those goals came in a 3-0 loss at Manchester City. So you take away those 3 goals, defensively they are excellent. Their last 3 games, they've kept clean sheets in all 3, they've won all 3. 2 of them being at home, once against Newcastle, a 1-0 win against Newcastle, and the other, the 2-0 win at Swansea from Saturday. This is just a very, very well-organised, disciplined, difficult-to-play-against team. How concerned are you, Henry, that Arsenal are going to drop points, as Spurs have done, as Liverpool have done, as Everton have done? How concerned are you that Arsenal are going to drop points against this Burnley team?
Let me actually turn the tables around. I was speaking to my dad about this and he put a really, really good question to me. He said, Henry, you have £1,000 to bet on this game. How much of it are you betting that Arsenal win? And I thought, oh, I don't know. 300 maybe, because I'm not confident, because this is a typical game that we would lose. Think back to the last time we lost at the Emirates to Watford back in January. Think back to Stoke earlier this year. This is the kind of game that we tend to struggle in. Mm. I think we only beat them last year because Koscielny scored a very dubious goal, if I recall, with his hands.
Yes.
So I am not looking forward to this game, but perhaps this is a game where Arsenal can really double, well, really put a stamp down and say, you know what, things are changing. We are going to come here and absolutely thump you. And if they do that, I would be absolutely over the moon.
Yeah, I mean, this is, as you said, this is the type of game that Arsenal are experts at losing. there are few things in life that are more certain than Arsenal being able to drop points when they shouldn't. And this is one of them against a tough, tough Burnley team. I'm very worried about this game. And like I said earlier in the show, the 3 points against Spurs, it's the same 3 points that you get if you beat Burnley. There's no difference between how many points you get for a win against a good team or a perceived less good team. So Arsenal have set themselves a standard from Saturday, and if they can't match it against Burnley, then it kind of undermines everything that they've set in place from the North London Derby win. Josh, if Burnley are able to cause Arsenal problems, how do you think that will look?
All of what our success seems to depend on, I mean, it's all going to be about the attack. I have no doubts that our defense can keep them out. I just worry about our front three being able to play that fluid style that they've been playing, or that they've played once. Well, twice, I guess, against Everton. But I think a lot of it will come down to being able to, because they'll know what to expect from Lacazette, Ozil, Alexis. That those are the three guys you got to watch out for. I think a lot of this has to come down to Ramsey and Xhaka and their ability to add another threat that maybe catches them off guard a little bit. Or I mean, because you said it, they're such a well-disciplined team that the trick is to just try to break that discipline, even if just for a moment. And thankfully, we have somebody like Lacazette that can take that chance if we can break them down just for a moment, because I could easily see this being a game where one goal does it. And so really, technically, all it would take is just a brief moment of being able to break them down, which I think it's plausible, but it's going to come from being able to throw something at them that they weren't expecting. And like I said, I think that comes from maybe the wingbacks too can get involved in that, but I'm curious to see how our front three deals with such a well-disciplined side.
Yes, me too. As we wrap up our look on Burnley, Sean Dyche, I'll throw this to you, Henry, could he be future Arsenal manager? And if the answer is yes, would you want him to be future Arsenal manager?
No. Because of the context of... I've heard a bit of discussion from United supporters about this. If they weren't winning under Mourinho, Mourinho would be gone.
Yeah.
Because it's not the kind of football that Manchester United fans are familiar with and expect.
Very much like Tony Pulis, as we are recording Monday evening, but very much like Tony Pulis today. It's the same principle, isn't it? Is it if you play a bad style of football, you have to make sure you're getting results.
You have to make sure you're getting results. And to an extent, I don't worry about the fact that he'd get results in a weird way, but I just worry about the fact that, I mean, granted, the football under Wenger hasn't been the best in recent years in comparison to what it once was. But I think if you're Arsenal, you're looking... And this is not to knock Sean Dyche down at all. I think you're looking a little higher up the food chain.
Do you think...
For a new manager.
Do you think it could be a little bit like the Mauricio Pochettino situation at Spurs where... Or you take a chance on a manager who is doing successfully at a Premier League team, mid-level Premier League team, and you say, we're going to give you the resources that a Burnley or a Southampton or a Watford or one of those clubs can't give you, and we're going to back your ability that you have at least to some extent proven in what may be a less pressured role?
I really doubt that. If I was in the position to hire a new manager today, I would not be looking at any of the current Premier League managers outside of the top six and thinking, you are the team that's going to lead this second Arsenal revolution, if you will. I think you've
got Marcus Silva?
Actually, he's the exception. Scratch everything I just said. He's the exception. But I think the one downside for him is that he's only been here, is it less than a year he's been in English football, which shouldn't really matter.
Yeah, I think he was hired in about December, January time,
which when you think about it shouldn't matter, but me personally, my personal preference would be to get Nagelsmann, but it seems as though he's a favourite for the Bayern Munich job for next season, but I just want, weirdly, I love Arsene Wenger, but I'm actually really, really looking forward to the excitement of a new manager, new tactics, new personnel. Even though I love Arsene Wenger, I'm being such a hypocrite right now, but it doesn't matter, because I think people will understand my point.
Yeah. Josh, would you take Sean Dyche as Arsenal manager?
No. Again, it's kind of the same thing Henry said. I think he's a great manager, and I think he's done some wonderful things, but it's not the kind of manager that Arsenal needs. I mean, they're such a defensive team, and yeah, we had George Graham had a defensive team, but I mean, we play at the highest level, the Premier League, we should be, and I think that should come from, you know, from playing beautiful football. That's what Arsene Wenger's always tried to do, and when it comes off, it's wonderful, and I don't know if you get that under Sean Dyche.
I personally would love Sean Dyche purely because we would have the Ginger Mourinho, which then when we go and beat Mourinho would just be all the more magnificent.
No, we just put out a 0-0 draw against a Mourinho team. It would be the most dull affair you could ever wish to watch.
But his post-match press conferences, his voice is just incredible.
It's raspy, I know, it's great. Yeah, it sounds like he's just come out, smoked a whole pack of cigarettes.
It's amazing. It sounds like he's going to break down every time he talks. But it kind of hangs on
Toy
with
Toy Story.
Yeah, it kind of hangs on with a little whisper of life. But so just purely for those two utterly nonsensical reasons, I would love Sean Dyche as Arsenal manager.
You know what, Andrew, you've convinced me. I now want Weezy. I want Weezy in. I want him now.
Get him in. The Ginger Mourinho. I mean, I wouldn't say I would like Sean Dyche as manager, but if he was to be hired, I wouldn't be disappointed by that. I think the way he's managed Burnley, especially with the long-term view that he has. I remember there was an interview on BBC Radio 5 Live with him. It was last season, partway through last season, when it looked like he was going to keep them up, and he did proceed to keep them up. They talked about his first season in the Premier League, where he brought them up, and obviously you get the inflated money from the TV rights and everything like that. And they were discussing how he chose to invest that money. And he said, we built a new training facilities. We upgraded our stadium. We invested in our squad a little bit, but actually we were quite frugal in the money that we spent. And instead we invested in what is a long-term perspective. They got relegated that season. They didn't sack Sean Dyche. They got promoted the next season. They then stayed up last season. And now this year they're reaping the benefits of the long-term decisions that were made primarily by Sean Dyche and the club 3, 4, 5 years ago. So while the style of football is a concern, I think there is an argument that could be said that perhaps with more money and better players, he would change his style of football. Whether that's actually right or not, I don't know. I guess there's only one way to find out there, isn't there? But he does he is not rash. He does not make decisions based on one or two games. He looks long term, and I think very much like Wenger, he likes to set up a club's foundations as well as the team, and that I think has been proven to be successful throughout Wenger's 21 years at the club. So I wouldn't necessarily say I'd like him, but I think it isn't necessarily the end of the world if the Ginger Mourinho does arrive at the Emirates in the next couple of years. Is there anything else that either of you would like to touch on the Burnley game or any other topic? I open the floor.
I'm just excited that there's so much football. There's so much football. That's all.
I would like to say that I want to throw a name out there for the next manager. I want it to be Patrick Vieira because he's done exactly what Arsene Wenger would have done at NYCFC in MLS.
That's New York Football Club for those who are less accustomed to the Americanisms.
Yes.
New York City Football Club, Andrew.
Well, yes. Yes. I apologize.
He's done all of the things that I think he learned from Wenger. He built a big foundation for a club that was overladen with superstars. And he's played the same kind of way. And, I mean, he's obviously a legend. So I think that would be a really good route to go.
Yeah, I mean, the legends route is always a tricky one, let's say. Sometimes it works wonderfully. Sometimes, look at Zinedine Zidane at Real Madrid. Sometimes it works terribly. But
I think the fact that he's proven that he can manage a team to success
changes
things. Because I'm not big on Thierry Henry because he hasn't managed a top-level team. And not that New York City Football Club's a top-level team, but he took them from lower levels to the top.
I mean, he is the Belgian assistant coach.
Yeah, but that's still not the level that I think we should be looking
for. No, I agree. I do think Vieira is... certainly has the intelligence and the capabilities, and now is beginning to build the track record that you can put together and then say, yes, this is the type of player, manager, man that we would like to build the club around. Henry, have you got anything else to add before we wrap up?
No, I haven't got anything else to wrap up. I'm just thinking about this riveting Stoke Brighton encounter that I'm currently missing and that I've got waiting for me.
Dear Lord. What I mean, Stoke Brighton.
You're so easy, Andrew. I got you hook, line and sinker there. Rah. Got ya.
It's just a terrible game. I do have this thing about Monday Night Football.
What have I done?
The best thing about Monday Night Football is the hour before and the hour after when Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville break down all the other games
and make jokes.
And then the Monday Night Football game is completely ignored because they're always rubbish.
Yeah.
It's always two middling, defensive, boring Premier League teams that I have no interest in watching whatsoever. Give me something good. Give me something entertaining.
I'd watch like Everton against Watford, but that's probably about it.
Yeah, yeah, but no. At least you've got some attacking talent on display. I mean, who are we watching? Like, we've got Pascal Gross. That's nice. Jurgen Shaqiri, that's good. And then we've got Choupo Moting up top.
Who scored against us? Was it Hesse and was it just Hesse?
It was Hesse.
Hesse.
He's not even starting, probably, is he?
No,
he's starting.
Is he starting tonight? He was dropped last week. Is he starting tonight?
I think I saw that he was.
He's not starting.
Of course not.
Yeah, well, good old Stoke. You can always rely on free flowing, attacking, entertaining football from the Midlands. So, as we look to wrap up this evening's chat and avoid Stoke Brighton as much as we possibly can. Let's take one last look at Saturday's game. North London is red, for now at least. How brilliant is that? Josh, I guess your optimism was vindicated somewhat.
It's a rare thing.
Yeah.
But yes.
It's a very rare thing. Yeah. Us British people, we're going to have to take some take some notes from the American because
nah, bar humbug, Andrew, bar humbug.
I'm an Arsenal fan. It's in my DNA to be negative about everything.
Yeah. Did you want to do predictions for the Burnley game?
Go on then. Josh, you're going to predict a win. So now go on. What?
No, I am. I'm giving it a 2-0 win.
Do you think Lacazette gets on the score sheet?
I think he does. I think he gets on, and I think we'll get one of those classic headers on a set piece from. It'd be awesome if it was from Mustafi, but I think that's how we break them down. Okay.
Henry?
I'll say 2-1, simply because this defence is too good. No, 2-1 Arsenal. I'm going to try this optimistic juice that Josh is on.
Yeah.
But then I just have this horrible feeling that Ashley Barnes is going to creep in and just be an annoying £3 million striker and just come up with a goal. And then we somehow wriggle it away from them in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, I think I do think Arsenal do win. I'll say a 2-0 win like Josh. I think we'll score late in the first half. I think we'll score in the second half, and then I think the game will be rather boring from then on.
I don't mind boring if we're winning.
No. I think this is one of those games, isn't it, where the performance doesn't really matter that much. Let's just get out of there with 3 points. Yeah, absolutely. Just get the win and move on, because it's a very, very tricky tie that could very easily go wrong, especially given Arsenal's usual level of performance in these type of games. So that is it for the second episode of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening to our ramblings. We will be back again next week after Arsenal inevitably lose to Burnley. And our ramblings will be far less positive than they have been this evening. Thank you very much for listening. Have a positive week. Enjoy Thursday night's game, where we get to see hopefully a myriad of new youngsters come into the team. And we'll see you soon. Goodbye.